Okay, so that's Reel 2 and it's Tom Barlow. It was about 1943 you got to, Tom.
Yeah.
What part would you say 1943? What time of the year, roughly, are we up to?
1943 would be down Callenbridge Forest and Grantown on Spey, moving up and down the country, a month here and a month there, practicing landings.
Is this early 43?
43, all the way through.
All the way through, yeah.
I suppose we knew it was for the invasion of Europe.
Yeah.
But being at our age, we never realised it.
No.
You never thought about it.
No.
Grantown on Spey when we started to move. Now we're getting to 1944.
Yeah, just to remind you again about something you just said off tape. You said off tape just now, didn't you? That at one stage you thought you may have been going to Sicily or something.
Yeah, we should have done. Yeah. When we came back, we were told we were told we were going to at the embarkation. When we came back, we should have gone to Sicily.
Yeah.
But owing to politicians or politics, they sent a Canadian division instead.
Yeah. Yes.
And we didn't go.
Mm.
And then we went to Forest, and then Grantown on Spey, and then the battalion after 1943 in February or March, something like that, we started to move towards the south coast. Well, we came down by transport, and the battalion went down by train, obviously. We landed, we moved to a place called Cosham, where we encamped, which had security people around it. Well, they were soldiers, but they were graded. In other words, they weren't A1, so they were on the outside. But we lived in tents, and the food was atrocious. There was nothing. We never got enough to eat. We had a lot of arguments over food. We went on a few marches, and this time the CSM we had, who didn't like the signals anyway, they never did, because the signals used to go out, when we went on the news, there'd be two at one company, two at another, and so on. They would disperse.
Yeah.
So that a sergeant major could never sort of get his hands on them.
Mm.
And we had four dispatch riders, and he couldn't sort of get his hands on them.
Mm.
And in this particular case, the CSM came to me. He said, "We're having a route march tomorrow, 5 mile route, and you're on it." I said, "I'm on duty." And he said, "No, no, you're on it." So we're in the army, they always say you take a bedroom, the last order.
Telephone?
Yeah.
Do you want to answer it?
Okay, Tom, that was a telephone. So you're on the south coast at Cosham, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I was at Cosham. They put me then, two of us, outside the camp on a little piece of grass with a bird in the tent. And we weren't allowed to talk to them in the camp, and then the dispatcher just given a shout, we'd go pick it up. But reversing back to this CSM, four minutes out, he said, "You're on it." So the next morning, off we go to this march. And he gave me, what was it, to carry a Piat mortar to carry, because it was heavy. And he said, and then he'd come up to me and said, "Are you all right?" You know, it was sarcastic. And I'd say, "Yes." We got back to the camp, and when we got back to the camp, the officer in Clark was waiting for me. He said, "Wait to get in that office and see the adjutant right away," who was the ex-signal officer. "I go in, and who's on duty to me?" "The way you mean? I've been on the march." "But you're on duty." "Yes, but I went on the march." "Why are you on the march?" "Just because the CSM coming had to." "Did you tell me you're on duty?" "Of course, I was delighted." "You must have." "Of course I did, yes." Well, what had happened was, while we were out, he had some dispatches to go to London.
Oh, right.
And he went to the central dispatch out of the government.
Yep.
So he had to ring the Suffolk Regiment to borrow them.
Oh, right.
Which they, of course, obviously, were very sarcastic, pulling his leg, and he didn't find it amusing.
Mm.
So when I got back to the camp, he was waiting for me.
Mm.
Found out I was on duty, of course, and I was telling him what had happened. Then the next minute, there was a shout up and down the lines for the CSM. And when he came out, his face was like a turkey cock. He was told in no uncertain manner never, ever go near the dispatch riders.
Mm.
Of course, we enjoyed that bit, of course.
Sure.
It was the army.
Yeah. What about, you mentioned you were carrying a peer. What about weapons training? What weapons training did you do?
Well, I fired the rifle. I had a rifle for a few years, and I fired the rifle. And then I got a stem gun, and I fired that a couple of times. But if you aimed a stem gun, with a rifle, I was a pretty good shot. But with a stem gun, I had some spare rounds, and I went into the office of the golf course we was at. I went in there and put a piece of paper on the trailer trying to create a mister.
Really?
Just missed it. I had to put it on automatic. Well, when you loaded a stem gun, it carried about, I think, 30 rounds, probably, but 28. When it'd been in the chamber for so long, you could shake it like a tin of beans. The spring was that weak inside the...
Really?
Inside the magazine, that after it'd been in so long, the spring was that weak, they were just loose. You could shake them about in the magazine.
It was a bit temperamental as well, wasn't it?
Well,
that weapon?
I seen them go off with the safety catch on. I saw a chap jump off the back of a wagon with one and just jumping off it now and seeing it and it went off.
Yeah.
And it was on safety.
Mm.
It was more dangerous to us than the Germans, I think. They were really rubbish. Mm. Absolute rubbish.
What about the rifle? The rifle was okay?
Oh yeah, the rifle. Well, up to when 1943 we had the Lee Enfield, which was 1914-18, and they changed them then to a different rifle, which I didn't think was as good, because the Lee Enfield had a V sign, a V, the new one had a circle, like an aperture at the back, and a point at the back, where you had to look and get the tip in the middle of the circle, right, with the V. To me, you could get even more accurate, but
yeah.
They changed them, and then, of course, I got a stem gun, which weren't much good anyway, but still, they just gave me one, and that was it.
Were there any rumours at this stage as to what was happening, landings and going back to France, or etc.?
Well, we knew something was going to happen, but as I say, it was what? 1920, you just start to add a mental block on it. Not deliberately, but you, in the army, you sort of live day to day.
Mm.
You know, all the things you thought about was in 3 weeks time, I don't even leave you. You know, but anything else was a day to day thing. You never give it a thought. And when we went to that camp, and then they put me outside, sure, it was in this tent. And we weren't allowed to talk to them inside the camp. But we had French money in our pockets.
Mm.
We'd been issued with francs.
Mm.
And we went outside with the civilians with a pocket full of French francs. Well,
that could have been a bit disastrous, really, couldn't it? You know, rumours would spread from that, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Well, eventually, we went on a couple of exercises, but it didn't apply to me as much because... We were on the motorbike, we didn't go on the ship, we just sort of moved from one camp to another and have a couple of parts in the nappy and come back. Then, this time we started to move and we landed, came to a place, I don't know the name, there were some modern, oh they were modern then, semis, and they built a concrete ramp into the sea and these landing craft were coming in.
Mm.
And I got on the landing transport, the motorbike. And they put the motorbike, and we change our motorbike, they take the big ones off as part of the BSA, and they give us these little trolley ones.
Yeah.
And, you put on the paddle together.
Like two stroke?
Two stroke, you push them more than you go. And they put this thing on a duck. You know what a duck is?
Yeah, it's a motorised floating boat thing. Yeah.
We put this on the dock, and on the left, as we were waiting with this semi, there was a girl near the door, and of course, being in the army and being cheeky, he said, "Oh, what about a cup of tea?" You know. Anyway, she disappeared, come in, put a jug down, and said, "Put it near there, and she said, leave it there, we're not supposed to talk to you." And the police were going all the way around. But all down the street, the day before, there was all these wagons and tanks. All the pavements had been broken up with the weight. And they were all playing cards on the pavement with French money.
This is in 1944 now, isn't it? And leading up, D-Day was 6th of June, wasn't it? So this was a bit before that, presumably.
Yeah, well, when we were waiting to go on the ships, we moved it in stages. You know, you move a few sticks and then there, and it came your turn. But they were playing cards on the pavement with French money.
I suppose, really, it was obvious anyway that they were guides to France, wasn't it? Absolutely. In fact, weren't they expecting you to land at Calais?
And eventually, say, this girl got this cup of tea and etc. And we had it and we put it there, but you all come near us. The police had been up and down all the time, mustn't go near the truth, Then we got on this ship, and it's quite big, really.
But you didn't know where you were going at this stage, did you? No.
And we got on and off we went. During the night, we were sailing for about 24 hours, I think. I think we're going round the circles when I think about it. I'm sure we were.
Where did you leave from?
Cosham.
From Cosham. Cosham's on the coast, is it?
Oh, yeah. And we were sailing around for quite a bit. And then this night, it sort of, that was it. It sort of, everything began. We saw a big, no light, of course, a big ship went by. We could hear the bagpipes playing on it with no lights. During the night, then, this naval officer, who was obviously the boat commander, came on the chat thing. He said, we're landing in France at approximately 7 o'clock. I got a message from General Eisenhower, you know, wishing you good luck and all this stuff, and you're liberating France.
And you knew at that stage that this was D-Day?
We were landing between, I think, now we said Cherbourg and Le Havre.
Right.
And anyway, when daylight came, you sort of looked round and there they were, thousands of ships.
Yeah.
You know, literally thousands of ships. And then the planes were going over, the gliders and everything else, the parachutes had landed during the dark. And the gliders were going over. And on the sand dunes, there was only short beach, the sand dunes, and then houses like Blackpool boarding houses. A little window in the attic. Yeah. The Germans were in the attic.
Yeah. What time was this? This was 7 o'clock, you say? On D-Day. Yeah, June 6th.
And,
was there any firing from the Navy guns?
First time we ever saw a rocket ship. Didn't know what we were obviously hit by these rockets. Not one at a time. I'm guessing now maybe 20 at a time it could have been any, I don't know. They just went bush.
Yeah.
Then these big ships, there was one big ship and it had the 3rd Division sign painted on the bow. And that was firing, I think, the 16-inch guns.
Right.
When they fired, the whole ship just, you know...
Rocked.
While we were there, the German planes came over. We didn't know there were German planes. There was about half a dozen, I think. Didn't know the German planes, so the chap on the ship was just sat it up and fired on them.
Yeah.
They were German.
But there weren't many German planes were there?
No. I think that was the only German plane that we actually saw. And when we landed, of course, I don't know what you could say. I don't think you had any feelings. It's funny you think about it. What about feelings did you have? Didn't have any.
But I'm just trying to picture now the situation, the weather. I mean, was there much of a sea at that stage?
To me it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't too bad. But it all depends what they actually wanted. Apparently the tide was higher than it should have been. I was only short beach, massive barbed wire.
Did you actually land in water, or did you land...
Well, I didn't, because I was sat on the dock.
On this dock, yeah.
I got a dry landing.
Yeah.
Some didn't.
Yeah.
Some did. Yeah. It all depended. I mean, you've got the troops with the small, and some of them, they more or less had a dry landing. Some didn't. They had tanks that were supposed to float and some did and some didn't.
It
went down. I suppose when I got jumped off the duck onto the ground as such, and I thought if you look round, you just still don't realise. You look round and you could see, and it was only years after I realised what it was. Like when you throw bricks into water and you get a little spurt of water shooting up. But you could see this happening in the water. And at the time, this is what you thought it was, but it wasn't.
No.
It was bullets.
Sure.
But you don't realise.
No.
You just don't realise. And the first Germans they actually saw prisoner, I always thought of Germans and German officers. Always one with a monocle in his eye. And funny enough, the first Germans I saw, they had the officer front in the eye. He got a monocle in one eye.
Right.
I always remember that. Because I'd always visualised them, you know, what the Germans looked like. To us, you thought them as monsters. You know, you think they were, actually they were looking just like yourself, but
yes.
You thought them, and there was this chap with his monocle in one eye.
But
we got off the beach, and
was there much on that beach when you landed? I mean, was there much signs of well, you were first there, so there wasn't any signs of fighting prior to you, was there? Because you were first on the beach, basically, weren't you?
Yeah.
Was there much chaos on the beach?
Not really.
No.
No. There was also the Bangalore. The Bangalore torpedoes wouldn't go off. They were wet. But a flare tank got on. See the difference, I believe, between the Americans and the British. The Americans didn't send tanks in with them. The British did. And they had flare tanks. I don't even know what I mean by a flare tank.
Yes, like a chains on the front of a drum.
To set the landmine up.
Yes.
This flare tank got through the barbed wire and lost the track, but it paved the way as such. And that was
yeah, because you didn't know where you were at that stage, but of course now we know you were on Sword Beach at Ermineville, weren't you?
Yes.
Is where you were.
I didn't know where it was then.
No.
And I had no map. And this Rangoon carrier, the captain, he was a captain, he was a quartermaster, and he couldn't read a map. But when we landed, he had a map. And I said, let me read the map. He said, no, he couldn't read one. But anyway, we got going and we ended up with the battalion HQ. The colonel we had got killed on the beach.
Oh, right.
He landed with, let's say, put it this way, to my mind, he was a proper Colonel Blimp. He came to us from the Devonshire Regiment, Light Infantry. He landed with a new regiment of flag in one hand.
Oh, right.
And, he didn't make it up the beach.
They picked him out, presumably.
Oh, yeah. Well, they do. They picked all officers out. If they're going to shoot somebody, they look for the ones that's in charge. And he didn't get off the beach. And we got to HQ, in Ermineville, in a long drive, and popped the street. I looked back on one side and he was there, and then a German plane came. I didn't see it. It was a fighter plane, and we all ended up in the ditch. And they just jumped from somewhere, they made a brew from some wagon, and we had to cut it in the mess tin. And when this plane came, they all dived in, they were full of knuckles.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. We didn't spill the tin. But we were there for about 24 hours, I'm guessing. But this, before that, this chapter with the quartermaster, we were going up this road, going behind him on the motorbike. Because the splitters on landing, you know, we all did land up there. The two that the Scottish batch had, two landed off one ship, two landed off another. The one that we made it, the other two, and our friend one got killed and the other got wounded.
Really?
So this is the idea of splitting them up. So that there was always a duplication. We went up this road, I was following him, and there was a tree across the road. Straight up. But in this field there was little mounds, they didn't have hedges, mounds. And there was the men behind this mound all lying down as such. And we took them along, we come up to this tree, and one of them, they recognised me, went, "Where are you going?" I said, "I don't know this." "Well, you don't want to go up there. If you pay for the guns up there." Well, this chap turned around that brand new car, and when you grab the, like, he's going back. Road of speed, I can tell you. Mm. I was behind him.
Mm.
He read the map wrong.
All right.
So we got to BHQ, our battalion headquarters, and we was there for 24 hours. Then we moved up to Chateau Londel.
Yes, I've heard
and
of it.
We got to it, and it had a big wall outside, and we went through, and we got to the town side of the grounds, where there was a big dugout, which the Germans had dug for the shelter. It was, I think the officers were staying in that chateau. We was there about 2 hours, and obviously the shells come over. So then we started to dig, and they moved us out of that, maybe the first aid post. We went down this wall on the other side, well, far from camp, down this wall, and dug a trench. And we dug it, and got along to the wall, went in the chateau, pinched some damn mattress, put some. Found some timber, put it across the trench, put the slumber down mattress, put the saw on top, and we dug away from there. We dug a step in, so you got in at the side, and we were running out to get in it when some shells came over, and we were sat in the bottom.
Mm.
You know, we just sat in. We was there for a while until Khan fell. You could see Khan, and one day we got shells for nearly 24 hours. And every camp party in the next shell came over. And one shell, we were sat at the bottom of this trench, and a shell came over and hit the wall about 2 foot above the ground, right over the trench. And the wall was sent straight on the trench.
Yeah.
The trench. But it held, so we were lucky.
Mm.
Mm. Oh, there was quite a few got killed then.
There was a lot of fighting around that place, wasn't there, during that time?
I've heard since from Reliant, with the headquarters or brigade or division kept saying there's no tanks in that wood opposite. They're all between us and the Germans was a cornfield.
Hmm.
That was all. And they kept saying, the people in Alvitan kept saying there's tanks in that wood. And the division kept saying there is no tanks in that wood. And eventually they sent a B company in. I think they sent a platoon in at first and they come back. And we've been there a couple of weeks ago when they sent a big company in. And they got really hit.
Mm.
They, I'm guessing them now, but I should say about 18 came back.
Yeah.
They were locked up, killed, and got captured.
From a company?
Yeah.
From a company. The company.
120 in a company.
Yeah, right.
Mm. I'm guessing now. Because, I mean, I wasn't in vehicle, but the two signals were, they got back. And they got in the wood and kicked the Germans out, more or less, but then the Germans come back with the tanks.
Yeah.
And they had no support for tanks.
Yeah.
So they got really hit. You know.
This would be about what? June, the early June?
Middle of June.
Middle of June.
End of June.
Yeah.
We would take the dispatch at 3 o'clock in the morning to Brigade HQ and we took in the turns. And they used to have a coach. One of them, one night, I always remember, it was Nirvana Knox, the comedian.
Yeah.
Well, I got to Brigade this day and the chap was in the bushes. Off two goes there and the next one shows Sten gun pointing at him in the middle. I said no voice in Oxford and I told him he wants to better point that Sten gun because it weren't safe to anybody.
Yeah.
I went then a chap named was Corporal, still lived in Bonington. He came to me with lane lines ripped his trousers. So I said I'll take you to Vieshon with the transport. Okay. So I got on the motorbike across. I didn't ask permission, we just did what we wanted to, really.
Yeah.
Took him to the echelon and got him a new pair of trousers. Got on the way back, got to a little village, I think it was called Gazelle, or that's how I pronounced it. And a jeep came out the side road with a brigadier general in it and a colonel, staff colonel, and they hit me.
They hit you?
Hit the bike.
Yeah.
And of course, we both ended up on the floor. But we got up. and this colonel started to give me a roasting, and then this brigadier general stopped him. He said, "It's my fault," he said. "I'm driving on the wrong side of the road." Didn't we just landed, apparently.
Yes.
So I sprained my ankle. So I don't know, anyway, we ended up, he sent a daughter truck to get the motorbike up, and Norman and I, that's the chap, had ripped his trousers again. So we get back to the echelon, and we're given 24 hours rest, because I was, you know, which we're looking forward to. Well, there, they've never had any trouble. They had selections you could never use.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought this is great. So at night time, I get under this wagon, and I had a blanket, because I had panty bags, and I had a blanket, and put my ground sheet blanket, and I had my haversack, and there was a pillow, and I used to bring the cigarette package up. So I had in there tins of 50s of players, round tins, and so I was all right, and I was fell asleep, and I could hear this. You've got a sense of this, that's getting close. And I thought, well, that came too close. So I got rolled from under the wagon, found the slip trench, and there was a sergeant in there. Said, "Any room, you seem to reckon?" "Oh, jump in, can't." So I jumped in, got down one corner trench, he got the other, and fell asleep. Woke up next morning, all the wagons, flat tyres, windows out, it was shrapnel.
Really?
I went for my cigarettes, and my blanket was full of shrapnel holes.
Really?
And my tin of cigarettes in the haversack of engine deck, and shrapnel went through them.
Lucky then.
Mushed all the cigarettes up.
Lucky.
Well, I never thought about being lucky. As I say, you just, mine doesn't work that way.
No.
You just, my criteria then was, I'd lost my cigarette. But when months after you think about it, if I'd have stayed under that wagon, that was it.
Yeah.
I'd have been killed. But
yeah,
I was one of those things. Another time we went from the back of the chateau, that's a big wall, and you went down a road, leaning away from it, and then about 500 yards, there was a road to the left, small country road, and that led to this gazelle, and it was an incline leading up to the gazelle. I was going to brigade, I went down the road, turned left, went up to the brigade, coming back, as I got back to the end of the village, there was a hedge, and there was two chaps there digging a trench, not in our regiment, and they stopped and said, "Can't we down there?" I said, "Well, what do you mean? I've just come from..." "No traffic in daylight." I said, "I've just come from there." And while they were talking to me, whether the Germans had saw me not, because they could see us from Cannes in the tube, two shells landed right on the T-junction.
Really?
And they said, "Well, you look at so-and-so."
Didn't they have... because they had some of these junctions sort of zeroed in, didn't they?
Yeah. And they, whether they'd seen me or not, I don't know, but I would have just been on that T-junction.
Yeah.
And they'd stop me and they said,
stronger
language than that.
Absolutely.
So I stopped with them behind this hedge and had a cigarette for about 10 minutes. And I said, "Now I'm off." And I got on the bike and shot down that road. You know, but 10 minutes, they don't know I'm going to come now.
That's right.
And I shot them there. The second day we landed, we went, we went on the canal with near the airborne. Where the airborne landed.
Pegasus Bridge area. Bridge.
Well, we went on that with them. We're not told. We dug in, but on the bank. But I think it was there to reinforce them until they got whoever was going to reinforce
yes.
them.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's why we were there. We were only there 24 hours.
Mm.
But I think that's what we were there for, to reinforce them until they got reinforcement.
Yeah.
Then we moved back.
Mm.
And...
because this chateau was on the other side of Caen, wasn't it? On the right of Caen, the chateau.
On the Hermanville side.
On the Hermanville side, yes.
That wall eventually ended up with more or less rubble for the shells that took it. We was there until they put the attack in the night before they attacked Caen. Occasionally the Navy opened up with 16 inch guns, and you could actually see the shells moving over. On a 16-inch gun, you could see the shell. I don't know if it's from a small calibre, you wouldn't see it. It was a high, but the big shells, you could actually see them going over in the air. You could actually see them. I don't know why, but it's full of slower speed, I suppose. We were there, and saying you never hung about because you never knew when the next shell was coming over there. they knocked that wall down completely with shells. Then the night before they put the attack in, there was, I don't know, I'm guessing, maybe 50 bombers came over, maybe more. And they came over, and the night before, and it went dark, and you could see the bombs dropping like beads.
Yeah.
And they dropped all these bombs.
Mm.
And next morning, this shouted me, because the BHQ was in the cellar at the end of this. Go to the echelon, that's transport. Bring Captain Burke up, who was a quartermaster. We want to see him, so off I go, get to the echelon. Go to the Captain Burke. He was a regular. He got a commission at the beginning of the war. And said they want your BHQ. Oh, now that's an issue he'd ever got. It was this 3 or 4 miles down the line. And just as he was telling about it, all the guns opened up in the field. And the ground lagged out there, all the flashing.
Mm.
And the Navy. Can't go with this. So what you have to do. Well, you have to do that. So we got back in the motorbike. And it, believe me, it didn't have to link to me.
Yes.
And we got back, and I got to this wall. I said, you think that's all there? I said, you'll see this.